Are you looking to connect with a diverse audience of developers? Look no further. You can partner with us here at the Code Newbie Podcast, and we'll help get your message out to our incredible listeners in an ad just like this one, led by me, your host. Contact us by emailing sponsors@codenewbie.org. Welcome to the Code Newbie Podcast, where we talk to people on their coding journey in hopes of helping you on yours. I'm your host, Saran, and before we kick off the show, I want to tell you about our incredible sponsors. Today on the show, I'm so excited to have Peruvian developer Andrea Del Rio on the show. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Yes. Andrea, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. So you are currently in Seattle, but you're located permanently in Peru. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
So what are you doing in Seattle?
So I'm doing a fellowship, and I'm supposed to meet with the other fellows in a few weeks in New York. So anytime I get a chance to visit the U.S., I have to stop by Seattle because a part of my family lives here. So I decided to come a bit earlier to spend some time with them. So that's why I'm in Seattle.
Very nice. So you are a Ford Mozilla Open Web Fellow.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Tell us about that. What is that fellowship?
So the fellowship is an initiative by Mozilla and the Ford Foundation. This is the first year that they are doing it. So we are the first cohort.
Oh, I didn't realize it was so new.
Yeah. They've had the Open News one for a few years now, but the Open Web Fellowship is brand new. So I'm proudly part of the first cohort.
Yeah, congratulations. That's
thank
awesome.
Thank you. So the reason why they created this fellowship is to bring together two big forces. One, emerging technology talent, and two, leading civil society organizations. So what they do is they recruit technical talent from all over the world, and then they match them to civil society organizations based on their background, on their experience, and on their profile. And then you get embedded to your host organization for 10 months. What you do, I look at the fellowship as two processes going at the same time. One, I bring my technological talent and fresh eyes, and I think like a new way to see things and maybe a drive for innovation. I work with them closely on different projects. I'm building stuff for them, websites and so on, but at the same time they are teaching me stuff. I'm learning about their work and the causes they fight for, and I'm also learning a lot about civil society and how that world works. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of giving, but also a lot of receiving.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I work with the Mozilla team. They are like coaching me through the whole experience, and me and the other fellows are also at some point going to work on some projects together. To see what we can come up with as a cohort.
So civil society organization, I don't think it's a term I'm very familiar with. What does that mean?
So civil society are organizations that represent society and that they fight for things like equality or women's rights, justice, everything that should be universal and happening at all times in our world, but unfortunately it doesn't. For instance, my host is a great organization called the Association for Progressive Communications. It's an organization that has been fighting for internet's rights for over 25 years. So from the very beginning of the internet. And they focus on internet's rights, on women's rights, and on sexual rights for LGBT. So that's an example of a civil society organization. and all of our of the organizations that we are working with are part of that category, so to speak.
So why is the fellowship targeting civil society organizations? Why do we need to bring tech to them specifically?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what happens right now is that the people with the technical skills tend to be more attracted to either startups or big companies like Twitter and Facebook and so on. And they don't see that working for civil society organizations that attractive for different reasons. Maybe one can be the wage difference. The other one can be that they just don't feel the call or the sense of duty, because to work for a civil society organization, and I was thinking about this last night, it's not just a work, a 9-to-5. It's people that devote their life to fight for what they believe on. So if you don't have that chip that you're willing to devote your talent to fighting for different causes, then it's just not for you. So when they recruit us, they recruit us as people that are technical and we are developers, but we also have that sense we've done some of work for others. You know, I was working teaching women how to code, and that's how they made the match between me and my host organization that focuses a lot on women. So that's the problem that the fellowship aims to fix. To show developers that working in a civil society organization can be amazing, and that you learn a lot and you can really make a difference. Sometimes these organizations don't really have much of that mindset of innovating or using the latest technologies. So what we can bring and how we can help them is the opportunities are very big, and we have a big chance of really making a difference and helping them achieve even bigger things.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the first thing that I was thinking of too is when I think about institutions and nonprofits, I don't think of them as the most open-minded and innovative companies when it comes to tech. Having worked in that space for, I think it's been a few months now for you, what has your experience been like with them being open and accepting of your ideas and of these technological advancements, improvements on how to do things?
I think what you just said is very accurate. And it's an ongoing process. I feel like I have a lot of pitching to do and to get them to change some things. But at the same time, I think they are aware that they need to do certain things different in terms of the use of technology that they do. And that's why they were happy to host me. But at the same time, they are so used to the way they do things that sometimes it's hard for them to accept change. But I think they are open to do it, but I have to present my ideas in a way that it's solid and that they can say, okay, let's ditch a CMS for this new project and let's use something that's not a CMS. A CMS is a content management system, like WordPress, for instance, for those that may not be familiar with that. So, yeah, I think it's a challenge. I'm not going to lie. I think it is a challenge, a very important one. But I also think it depends on how I present my ideas in a way that they are really convinced that what I'm proposing is what's best for the organization.
So what are some of the projects and apps and things that you've built as a fellow in that organization?
So I've been on my fellowship for 2 months. And so, I spent half of my first month traveling. I was in Malaysia, and then I was in Mexico, and I was in the Philippines too.
Wow, all related to work or just for fun?
Yeah, or related to work.
Wow, that's a great job.
Yeah, I couldn't be happier, to be quite honest. So in these first 2 months, I've been doing more of a consultant job because and this before becoming a developer, I was a business consultant. So it's bringing back the memories of my past.
In a good way or a bad way?
In a good way. It's like a going back to what I was doing before, but more tech oriented. So I've been analyzing the things that they've been doing, making suggestions. And now that I have the reports and I've also been doing some user research, now is the time to start building things. And I'm really excited about beginning to build a platform that's going to host APC's Feminist Principles of the Internet. I think it's a project with immense immense potential, but the way that they've been showcasing it hasn't been very efficient. So one of my main tasks in this fellowship is build a very interactive platform that allows for more people to discover the feminist principles of the internet, that allows for people to share them, that allows people to download them, to translate them into their own language, to maybe create their own version for whatever they identify more with. Because right now they are breathing in a way that is more meant for activists and women's rights movements, and that can mean that the language they are reading on, it's not that accessible for everyone. So maybe you just want to, I don't know, fork it and create your own version. That's the first thing I'm going to build for them. I'm very excited about it.
That sounds exciting. So what I love about what you just said is that you are drawing from skills that you had before you became a developer into your developer role. And I think that's really important because we have a lot of listeners and a lot of people in our community who are making that jump, right? Who are transitioning from something not directly related to tech and now are entering the tech field. Tell us a little bit more about your coding journey. How did this all start for you?
Sure. So I went to school for economics. I have a Bachelor of Economics. And I was working for a consulting firm in Peru. I was doing management consulting, helping firms make decisions, doing a lot of strategic planning and market research and data analysis with clients from different industries like energy, the healthcare industry, mining, hospitality, and so on. And when I left the job, I was a consultant, but I started off as an intern. And I clearly remember that the way that the consulting works is that at the beginning of the year, in summer, in Peru at least, it's like low season because you don't have as many projects. So as interns, we were relatively free. And I remember that one of the other interns got a very boring task to do, that he would have to generate some codes to download data from about imports and exports. And then he would write down the code and then he would have to wait and then go back to the website and literally press control find and copy and type, not even paste, type the code and then download the zip and then unzip it and then create a report with, imagine, 100 files, because this was a government site that we would use all the time and it would only allow us to download 1 year at a time. So if you needed data about a product for 5 years, you were going to have to create five codes. And if you needed five products for 5 years, you were going to have to create 25 and so on. So I wasn't the one assigned a task, but I was thinking, since we use this all the time, at some point, they are going to have me do the same. And I was thinking, I don't want to do that. Like, I'm not going to do that. That's not going to happen. So I started thinking, well, what if I build something that lets us do this? And I started researching. At the time, I only knew Visual Basic for Microsoft Excel, because that's what I learned in college. And I started literally Googling how to download as a file using Visual Basic, how to visit a website and fill in a form using Visual Basic. And little by little, I put together a program that did the whole thing in a couple of clicks. And my team was so stoked, not even the interns, but also the consultants and the bosses, mm-hmm. because my boss was pretty cool, and he would organize innovation contest. And even though I was an intern competing with senior people, I won with that little piece of software.
Yeah.
From that moment, I realized that I love using coding to solve problems. And I started really like daydreaming about what if I did this for a living. And I started looking into options to transition from economist to developer. And I found some certificates that they offer in the US, but they didn't qualify me for a student visa, so I had to rule that out. And then I came across this emerging education concept of development bootcamps that turn pretty much a beginner into a junior developer in 9 to 12 weeks. And I thought, whoa, that's what I need. No, this is it. This is amazing.
Yeah.
But then a huge problem quickly arise. It's the fact that it was completely out of my budget. Completely out of my budget. And I think the risk of doing those bootcamps in the US make sense in the way that you expect to get a job that is going to completely offset the investment. But in my case, I was going to pay, I don't know, imagine $12,000. And then I was going to go back to Peru because I wasn't eligible to work here in the US and find a job. With luck, I will find a job. And then I'm thinking a developer in Peru, a junior developer, makes, best case scenario, $9,000 a year.
Oh, wow.
A year, okay. Yeah. I'm talking about, and I'm being generous.
Yeah.
It's probably less. So imagine me investing $12,000.
Yeah.
For a course, and then go back home, get a job that's going to pay $9,000 in a year.
Right.
So that wasn't an option. But that was something that saddened me, because I really thought that the format was exactly what I needed, you know, mm-hmm. someone mm-hmm. trying to change careers and so on. So one day I came across an option in Canada, and it was a bit cheaper. It was a lot cheaper, actually, but it's still expensive for me. And they were offering scholarships. So I decided to apply, and I got a scholarship, and that's when I decided I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to take my savings, and I'm going to move to Canada for a couple of months to do my bootcamp on Rails. So I'm forever thankful to my coding bootcamp for that opportunity, because without them, I wouldn't have been able to complete the bootcamp. And the bootcamp, was really amazing. I learned a lot, had a great time in Canada, made great friends that I'm still in touch with, mainly from Canada and the US. And that was what allowed me to make the transition from economist to developer.
So for that, so you had a full scholarship for that program?
They gave me the most they could. So I ended up paying $500.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's way less than, you know, $15,000. So that's good. So you did that. I'm wondering, going back to the moment where you used coding to solve that problem and you competed, at what point did you realize that that was something you could do as your main job?
That's a very good question. To be quite honest, at that point, I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure that it was something I could do as my main job, but I thought that I liked it so much that it was worth trying. And now, more than ever, when we see all the efforts that companies and governments and different organizations are making to bring more people in this industry, it's clear that there's high demand. So that's maybe not the reality in Peru. It's not as attractive to be a developer as it is in more developed countries. But yeah, at that point, to be quite honest, I wasn't convinced. You know, I decided to take the risk for a year. That was my the period that I was going to try to make this happen. And then if that didn't work out, I was going to go back to working as an economist because I had a good job, you know, and I was working for a good company. No complaints there, but I wasn't in love with what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you went to Canada for, how long was the bootcamp for?
The bootcamp was for 9 weeks.
9 weeks. So when you left, did you immediately go back to Peru? Did you know what you were going to do afterwards? What was the game plan behind that?
So I didn't have a job to go back to, so I decided to take it easy, and I came to Seattle, my favorite stop, mm-hmm. to spend some time here and planning what was next. And I was working for some months on a project that I presented on Demo Day in my bootcamp. And I decided to contact some business people that I knew in Peru and pitched to them the idea of this project over Skype. And they were very excited. They didn't know anything about technology, but they were people that had money that were looking to invest in different things just to diversify. And they decided to fund me and this project. So I eventually went back to Lima to found a startup.
Good for you.
Yeah.
How did that go?
So this is quite interesting. When I got to Lima, I knew that I was going to build my web application because for the demo day, I built something very simple with what I had learned and what I was able to put together in a couple of weeks. But now that we were going to release it, we needed something more complex. And I started looking for people that knew Rails so that somebody could do the backend with me. And I also, at that point, I didn't know anything about frontend. So I also needed a frontend developer. And I quickly realized it was going to be very, very hard to find a Rails developer in Peru. So I decided to contact a couple of friends that I made in Canada that did a bootcamp with me. That we called ourselves the Latino team because we were all Latinos. And I decided to convince them to move to Lima to work with me. And wow. I also had to convince my investors to pay for the flights and all that. Yeah. So I managed to do that, and my friends moved to Peru to build this application with me. So
they came?
Yeah, they moved to
wow.
Lima. They moved to Lima. One was Mexican, and one was one is American, but his parents are from El Salvador and Mexico. So they moved to Peru, and we had a great time building the product. But there are many things that went wrong with that. I actually have a blog post that I'm working on about everything that I learned during that experience. Me personally, I wasn't having such a good time because the reason why I decided to found a startup is because in my mind, that was going to enable me to be a developer full time. And I realized since I was the one leading that many, many days would go by and I wouldn't write a line of code.
Mm-hmm.
Because yep. I was in charge of HR and I had meetings with investors that also wanted to build other things that they came up with. I had to go to banks and lawyers. And so believe it or not, days would go by and I wasn't writing any code, which is my passion. And I was seeing my friends that they would spend the whole day just chilling. I mean, not just learning more and building things and coding all day. And I could see, particularly on the other backend person, that he was moving forward and I was stuck because I didn't have the time.
Yes.
So I realized that maybe that wasn't the best decision for me professionally. Mm-hmm. And about 4 months went by and the investors realized that they weren't going to get their money as quickly as they thought, and they decided that they weren't going to keep funding us. So I had to stop the project. And well, tell my friends that was it, that I was so sorry about it, and so on. And at that point, I could have thought more investment, because right now the startup thing is just starting in Lima and there's a lot of money to apply to. But it wasn't my calling. It wasn't something that I thought, maybe I can get more investment and keep going. That excitement wasn't there anymore, because I had been through so many hard things, dealing with investors and feeling like I was getting all this money that I was going to have to eventually, you know, give back. And that wasn't the case, because when an investor makes a decision like that, fully aware of the risks, they know what they are doing. You know, an investment has risks, and the riskier, the more likely is that you're going to get your money back and even more. But in my mind, and with very little experience in entrepreneurship, I felt as if I was going to have to somehow get all that money back and give that back to them. Mm-hmm. You know, so there were some moments of complete fear, mm-hmm. and of feeling like maybe I made the wrong decision. So luckily, everything went well. They told me clearly, we knew what we were getting into. Don't worry about it. We don't know anything about technology, and we don't want to invest more in the tech industry, because they were into exporting frozen fish. So they knew nothing about technology, and they weren't interested in pursuing that any further. So they let me keep everything related to the project. My friends were able to get other jobs, even in Lima. So all in all, everything turned out fine. But it's an experience that taught me so many things. And that also made me realize that what I want to do is build things to solve problems, but maybe not necessarily something that I'm for my profit.
Right.
But maybe for others. And that's what I'm doing now. So yeah, it was tough. It was tough, to be quite honest, but I'm glad everything turned out relatively well. I was above all worried about me and my team, you know, because I also wanted them to do well. And I took a risk for them, offering them the job and all, but they also took a risk for me moving to Lima and all. But we're all doing very well right now. So, and I think that experience helped them also like kickstart their developer careers. So in a way, I think their startup was able to contribute to that. Mm-hmm. So that makes me happy too.
So after you did your startup idea, did you then apply to the Open Web Fellowship and that's what happened next? Or what did you do after that?
No. It's funny how things turn out. I stayed with them for a little longer. I had to let go of my developer friends, but these investors asked me to manage one of their other businesses for a while. And since I was like transitioning, I decided to do that for like a month or so. And then once one of the friends asked me, "Hey, are you looking for a developer job by any chance? I'm working for a company and they are very interested in hiring a female developer." And at that time, I clearly remember it was a Thursday at night or a Wednesday. And I was vacationing in the US, and I told him, "Yeah, I am in fact interested. I will be arriving to Lima Friday, first thing in the morning." And he told me, "Come, I want to introduce you to the founders, to the owners of this agency, of this digital agency. this is my last day. I just got a job for a digital agency in Dallas, and I'm going to be working remotely. But in my last day, I want to introduce you to them. So I got to Lima, and I met with the founders of this digital agency. So what I'm trying to say is the friend that I got a job for and that I helped move to Lima was now helping me get a job, you know?
In Lima.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I met with these three people that are very, very talented and smart and amazing. I met with them a couple of times, and they were running a small digital agency in Lima. And they offered me the job. They offered me the job as a developer. And I started working a few days after. And it felt so good. Just being able to code for clients, no pressure, you know? Like the pressure of you as a developer and your deadlines and all that, but not having to worry about whether this is making any money, you know?
Are you going in the right direction?
Exactly. I felt so good. And I was like, this is for me. So the story of these three people, it's interesting because they were living in the US for a while, and they decided to go back to Lima and found this this digital agency, and they quickly realized what I also realized when I founded my startup, and it's the fact that developers are very scarce in Peru. There are very few of them. So they decided to found a nonprofit to train people into web development. And they also knew that there was a big gender gap. So they knew that they were going to focus on women. So I started, when I joined, they had just run the pilot and they were recruiting for the first real like cohort. And I had the opportunity to go with them to the outskirts of Lima and pitch the idea of learning to code to different women, which was quite a challenge because some of them were not tech savvy, or their knowledge of the internet was, well, the internet is Facebook, which it's something that millions of people think of around the world, and it's something very, very, very dangerous, something that we should all be very aware of. So we were pitching the idea of you should learn to code because it's going to open opportunities for you. And in those months, we were visiting different parts of Lima. We were also working on the curriculum for the very first cohort. And then the time came to receive our first cohort. And I had the immense honor to be one of the teachers. And I had such a great time, and I'm so thankful for the fact that I went through that experience, because I really feel like I was able to help them get to where they wanted to get, a better place professionally and hopefully also on a personal level. And so Laboratoria is the name of the nonprofit, and what they do is they take underprivileged young Peruvian women that haven't have access to college education due to economic reasons, and they turn them into junior front-end developers in 4 months, and they help them get jobs. And many of these women are women that were working, I don't know, in call centers. That's a very common job for people that don't go to college in Lima, and you make minimum wage. And those are jobs that you hate, and with good reason. And many of them realized that they love coding, and they got jobs, and now they are working for different digital agencies in Lima, having a great time, learning more now that they are on the job, obviously. Some of them, or many of them, from income zero to a very decent income, or some of them double their income.
Wow.
So that was amazing. It helped me discover another passion that I didn't know I had in me, which is teaching. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's closely related to the fact that I was teaching something that I love so much, which is coding. So yeah, that's what I did before becoming a fellow. I was working for Laboratoria right up till my fellowship started.
Mm. So I feel like another reason why that experience was probably very special to you is because you did something very similar. You went from a job that wasn't technical into a technical role using a very intense, you know, boot camp program. And it sounds like this program is very similar to that.
Yeah, the concept is actually very similar. The main difference is the fact that mine was in backend and the one that they do is in frontend.
Mm-hmm.
But I was especially motivated to be a part of it because when I got a scholarship to do my bootcamp in Canada, I promised myself that once I became a developer, I was going to give back and I was going to share what I knew with others. And doing it with other women in my country, it's something that means no other better way to give back than other women in my country. And that's what I hope to keep doing in the future, helping more women, helping Latinos learn how to code. That really is a big passion of me. So yeah, it was very motivating, the fact that they were going through a program similar to mine. And many of them would ask me, "Hey, Andrea, how do you learn to code? Tell us your story." And I would share with them what I just shared, the whole thing. Management consulting, then studying in Canada, fail a startup, and here I am, but with more detail. And I would share with them everything from the technical aspects of it to what I learned on a personal level, because I learned many things also on a personal level. And I also wanted to share that with them because they all come from very fragile households, dealing with violence, with being mothers at a very young age. And they have so many problems on a personal level that for me, it was important to be a role model for them, not only on the technical level, but also on the personal level, and making sure that they felt like they could do well in life by working very hard and focusing on what's worth focusing, you know, and try to avoid making wrong decisions and learning from your mistakes. So that was an extra motivation for me to be their coach, not only on the technical side, but also on the personal side.
That's such a good point. It's something that I'm appreciating more myself as well, that, you know, you can teach someone to code, but when you talk about changing someone's life or improving it, it's more than just a skill. You know, you have to address all the other problems that person may have, all the burdens they carry, you know, all the other stuff they have to deal with, whether it's, you know, growing up in poverty or, you know, having a kid at a very young age, whatever those circumstances are. How do you feel that a program like Laboratoria, how has that helped people from less advantaged places improve not just on their technical skills, but improving their lives?
I think it has helped immensely, and it's because the people running it have the vision. And what they would do is each day, each Monday in the mornings, they would have some sort of coach that would make them do dynamics to share, to integrate better with others. Because, you know, if they were between at the time 16 and 22, so you know that there's drama bound to happen. If you get women, mm-hmm. that age range, at some point they're going to get in fights and so on. So this was a great guy running another nonprofit organization. And he would come and do dynamics with them, like different exercises to do team building. They also had a group of four psychologists that would work with them throughout the course. So they were divided, I think, in four groups, and they would get in a space and do like a circle round and say, share how are you feeling, what problems are you having, as far as I know, they couldn't get one psychologist per person, but it was the closest thing that they had. And the student would become very attached to their psychologist, and it was their, like, their go-to person. So they had psychological support throughout the whole thing. They had also workshops like theater workshops, or I don't know if that's a thing in the US, but like pretending you're a clown kind of thing, just mm-hmm. to yeah. express yourself. So they had all of that parallel to learning how to code. And I think that was extremely important to build their self-confidence, to know that they were supported, to have someone to turn to when they were facing very hard things at their households. So I think that that's one of the reasons why Laboratoria has been able to be very successful so far, and to place these women into good jobs.
One thing that I love about your story is how well traveled you are. You know, your home is Peru, but you've been to all different types of countries and places in the context of being a developer. And I'm interested to hear about your observations. What are some big differences you see in the US and specifically in Lima? And what are those differences when it comes to coding and technology?
Just a few days ago, I was reading a very interesting article about why the software industry still is very small in Peru. Only a few players. We haven't built anything big. There's no Peruvian Facebook or Peruvian Twitter, and I don't see that changing in the near future, to be quite honest. And they pointed out an insight that I thought was very interesting. And it's the fact that many people, particularly men, going into engineering and computer science bachelors, they do so with the goal to become managers as soon as possible. And they look down on coders. They are like the construction workers, that they are going to follow our instructions and build things. And that's a big paradigm that we need to change. And that's also something that kind of set me back a little bit when making the decision, because I even when I explained my decision to my boss, I kind of was wondering if he thought I was like downgrading, you know, career wise.
Yeah.
Because I was in consulting, you know how consulting is. But I didn't care, you know, whether they fully understood what I was doing or not. There was only so much I could do. But my point is that that's a problem, cultural problem, perhaps, that we faced in Peru. I don't know if it's true for the rest of Latin America, but it definitely is in Peru. The people that go to engineering, they are thinking about being managers, looking down on construction workers or coders. So right now, being a developer in Peru is not as cool as it is here in the US. That's for sure.
That's interesting. Yeah, I remember, I think it was Sarah May tweeted something about this recently, maybe it was a couple months ago, where she said that people who are engineers, the idea of being successful in engineering is becoming a manager. And that's a problem, right? If your goal as a developer is to get out of developing on a daily basis, then that's not good for the tech culture. You know, I don't think that in the US coders are looked down upon necessarily, but there is still this idea that, you know, you've hit the big time once you're managing people and once you're, you know, you're up there. That's really where you want to get to.
Yeah, and another difference that I find is the fact that here, when companies are doing everything they can to get a talent. You know, they offer all these perks and a huge wage. So you're treated almost like a king or like a queen. And that's not mm-hmm. the case in Peru. To be quite honest, I mean, the opportunities to make a very good wage in Peru as a developer are mainly if you are good at coding, but you also are very good speaking English, and the best chance you have is getting a job working remotely, because mm-hmm. the Peruvian software industry itself doesn't pay that much. So if you're looking into making a lot of money, unless you speak English and you have good chances of getting a job abroad and working remotely, you are not going to make a lot of money by being a developer in Peru.
Hmm. And is all of that information that you knew going into it, or did you kind of figure it out once it was too late?
I think it's something that I knew, but at that time I didn't worry much about it. I guess it's because I also, like I told you, I gave myself a year, and I thought if this doesn't work out for whatever reason, I have a backup plan, and I can go back to work as a developer. Sorry, as an economist.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I didn't worry too much about getting a job or my income, my future income at the time. I was just trying to give this a try and see what happened.
Great. Well, it sounds like it's working out. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So next, let's move on to some rapid fire fill in the blanks. Are you ready?
Sure.
Number one, worst advice I've ever received is?
This one is a tough one, to be quite honest. This got me thinking that I've been very lucky in my life, and I've gotten very good advice, mainly by my coach in all of this, who is my older sister. So the one that I'm going to mention is one that has two sides, and is live every day of your life as it was the last. And I don't think that's a good way to go, because
I agree.
Chances are it isn't. But to be quite honest, when the person gave me that advice, it's because I tend to worry too much about the future. And sometimes that keeps me from enjoying the present. So I think you need to find a balance. You know, do not worry so much about the future that you can't enjoy the present, but also actively plan and think how you're going to make your future be better and look for opportunities. And that's what I've been doing all this time. That's how I went from laboratoria to my fellowship, and I'm already thinking what I'm going to do after my fellowship. And this is particularly important when you're in an environment with very scarce opportunities, like a less developed country where I was raised, and opportunities are not going to come knocking on your door. So you have to think about your future. You have to worry about your future. So that was my reflection about the worst advice ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have to think about it. You have to plan for it, but you should still enjoy the present.
Exactly.
I like that. I like that combination. Number two, my first app was about?
It was about reporting crimes and quickly sharing that on social media to alert your friends and family about what happened and where.
Interesting. What did you build that in?
I built it using Rails, and it's for my city, Lima, which unfortunately has gotten very dangerous. So I wanted to do something about it, and that was the first app I built on Rails. Although, I guess technically the very first one is the one that I mentioned previously about downloading info of exports and imports.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Very nice. Both of them with very good use cases.
Yeah.
Solving real problems. Number three, one thing I wish I knew when I first started to code is?
That I didn't need to invest a lot of money to become a developer. I was very lucky to get a scholarship from my coding school, HackerU in Canada, and I will be forever thankful to them. But one thing that kept me from taking the decision earlier, even though I wanted to, was the money factor. And I want to take this opportunity to say, if you want to be a developer and you can't afford to go to get a bachelor degree in computer science or to go to a development bootcamp, don't worry. There are so many good resources out there for you to become a developer. And it's all about what you are able to show and what you learn and what you build and your portfolio. So you don't really need to do these bootcamps. I'm not saying they are bad. I have nothing against them. But don't be discouraged from beginning this journey of being a developer if you can't afford to pay for the training.
Mm-hmm. So next, let's do some shout outs. Do you have a couple for us?
Yeah. I have actually three. The first one is, of course, by the W3C, which is the Worldwide Consortium. And it's this international organization that sets the standards for the web to keep growing, but in a single direction. It was founded by the inventor of the web, Tim Berners-Lee. So they are offering a course on HTML5, which is the latest version of HTML that we should all be using. And it's a free course on EDX. By the way, check out EDX because they have many other amazing courses like Intro to Computer Science by Harvard or Software as a Service by, I think, the University of Berkeley. But for beginners, I think the best one would be the one that I'm mentioning, which is W3C teaches you HTML5. They go over the new attributes that HTML5 has, and they show you examples on how to use them. It's very, very interesting. I'm still going through it. The next one is a book. It's called CSS Secrets by Ilya Barreau. I haven't read it yet, to be honest, because I haven't had the time, but I had the pleasure of seeing Leah speak at CSS Conf earlier this year in New York, and she's a woman that deeply understands CSS. She life-coded during her talk, and she's amazing. So I highly recommend the ones that are already familiar with the basic of CSS to go check out her book, because I know she teaches some really cool stuff in there. And the third one is, I'm giving a lot of resources for front-end developers. The third one is What the Flexbox. So Flexbox is a new CSS layout spec that lets you create dynamic responsive layouts easier than before. And What the Flexbox is a video series of 20 videos teaching you from the fundamentals of Flexbox to how to make some projects. And they give you the videos for free and they give you the code for free. So make sure to check those out, because Flexbox is like the next big thing on layouts in CSS.
So is it supposed to replace grid systems?
Yes, as far as I know, yes.
Huh. Interesting. I have to look into that. So I learned what Flexbox was for the first time, I think maybe 2 years ago, and I kind of understood it, but I didn't really understand the application of it. But I drew a cartoon where the Flexbox looks like a big green crazy monster. So I'm going to share that with everyone because it's just fun. But at some point, I will actually understand what Flexbox does and when I should use it. And this is probably a good time to do that.
Yeah.
And I have a couple personal shout-outs as well. So you should definitely check out the Ford Mozilla Open Web Fellowship that Andrea is a part of. So it's 10 months where you get to be a part of a leading advocacy organization that's really about safeguarding the internet and making sure it's a very safe global and public resource. And you get to work on lots of fun stuff. And it sounds like you have a really great community of other fellows to reach out to as well. So if you're interested in that, definitely check it out. The second is, I guess their sister fellowship, the Knight Mozilla Open News Fellowship, which is the one that I have heard of before, which is a similar format of 10 months, but it's specific to journalism. So you get to write open source code, you get to work on data visualization, and you get to spend a lot of time in the newsroom as a technologist building and working for journalism online. So definitely lots of fun, especially if you're into journalism and in that side of the field as well. My third shout out is really just for fun. It's this ridiculously awesome art thing. It is a depiction of Tony Stark, but done in salt and pepper. Literally, just salt and pepper. It's amazing. It's incredible. I don't understand how they managed to do the shading and the gradient on it, but you should totally check it out. Made me lose my mind, so I'm sharing it with you all. If you want to support what we're doing on Code Newbie, please check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/CodeNewbie. You can join the conversation on Code Newbie Discourse, our online forum for people excited about code, or you can chat with us every week on the Code Newbie Twitter chat. Just search for #CodeNewbie and tweet with us every Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And also, if you don't know, we've got a number of really great online projects going on. We've got one for Ruby, we've got one for JavaScript, for Python, we've got a couple book clubs, we have a Saturday discussion series. We've got a lot of really great stuff going on. So check out codenewbie.org and look at all the awesome things we're doing. And please feel free to jump in. We'd love to have you join and code and learn along with us. You can learn all of this great stuff on codenewbie.org. And if there's a topic you want to hear about or a guest you want to hear from, send us an email, hello@codenewbie.org. Thank you again, Andrea, so much for joining us. You want to say goodbye?
Yeah, thank you once again for having me. And if anybody has any questions or doubts about the fellowship or about the journey to become a developer, I also speak Spanish, so please make sure to contact me. I would love to hear from you.
That's really great. Thank you so much for that offer. Really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.